Hello, Polytopians. Thanks for tuning into the Polytopian Times. I'm your host, Sam, and today we're joined by Eastbark. Thanks, as always, for hopping on the episode here.
Hello, Sam. Glad to be here, except I have to admit, I don't play Vanguard. I don't even own it, but I'm willing. I'm going along for this ride.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, because, Vengir is an interesting tribe, and that's what we're going to be covering today. They're so slashy, and yet they are also so soft at the same time in a very strange way. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's cut into some lore. Up above you in the still air, dark clouds loom from horizon to horizon. They cover a blackened wasteland, broken up by jagged black mountain ranges and dotted with isolated clusters of ash trees, spindly white things with purple leaves sparsely scattered across the mostly bare branches. The leaves can actually be turned into a strong brandy with an acrid, intense flavor, the perfect thing to distract yourself from the dreariness of the Vengir wastes you're traveling through. The road here winds its long way through the black ash and the occasional stand of ash trees down a huge valley surrounded on all sides by the jagged dead mountains. This blighted land has been dead for a very long time. It's known that the calamity that desecrated this region of the square happened before the far-off Civil War of the Ancients, and the impacts from it helped sow the dissent and unrest that led to the rebellion, as food supplies and growing seasons square-wide were affected by the death of that province. What specifically the cause was is so far in the past that the memory has been lost to the passing of the Terns, with everyone in that province at the time of the catastrophe dead, leaving naught but a lifeless wasteland for many centenaries. The road leads you into one of the few copses of ash trees around, weaving its way through their white trunks. Interspersed amongst these sparse Vengir woods are poisonous purple Thixando shrooms, although they're a rare find. Far off you hear a primal roar. It's a rhino pig, a ferocious purple beast with black stripes, two sharp horns on its snout, and two sharp spikes on its tail. They're tanky creatures, built to take and deal damage. Their origin is uncertain. According to legend, the wastelands were barren and dead for many centenaries before the Civil War began. As the fighting became ever more fierce, the Proto-Vengir began to answer the violent retribution of the ancients with atrocities of their own, seeking to win a psychological war against their enemy. By the end of the war, word of the horrors happening under Vengir Blade spread far and wide. The other tribes united to drive this new ferocious threat into the ashy ruins of what was once paradise. When they first arrived in their new exile and began to settle, there was nothing else there living except for the ash trees and the Thixando shrooms. After a centenary, rumors of strange new creatures on the border of the waste in the Umaji Desert came about. The Vengir took notice and began to domesticate the savage beasts, intent on using them for vengeance against the other tribes. The rhino pigs were noted to gravitate towards a cave system by the border, and to appease this natural tendency, the Vengir penned and bred the rhino pigs in sewer systems underneath their cities. This had the additional benefit of making it rather difficult for the occasional escaped rhino pig to reach the majority of the population, keeping everyone relatively safe from harm. In this way, the Vengir helped the rhino pigs propagate and become a major species in their new home. Nowadays, the original home of the rhino pigs has become a preserve called the Kithka Boneyards, where Vengir from around the waste can go and learn about the history behind the rhino pig. As much as is known, anyway. Although the beasts are known for their deep purple hue, when they're born, the rhino pigs are actually ash gray and turn purple over time from the Thixando shrooms they eat, similar to how a flamingo gets its colors. Unfortunately, the poison of the Thixando shroom kills most rhino pigs before they reach adulthood. As a result, they're extremely rare to find in the wild. Almost all living rhino pigs are bred for war by the Vengir in their sewers. Of the Polytopians that have had the unfortunate luck of running into a wild rhino pig, few manage to live to tell the tale. The road you're traveling is taking you to Rotst to strike a trade deal with the local blacksmith, Hegor Penars, for a trade route bartering medical supplies for Vengir blades. Hegor is the highest-ranking Vengir in Rotst, in charge of both the settlement's metallurgists and the settlement itself, something unique to his tribe. Most other tribes have an hierarchy formed around nobility or merit, but the never-ending need for swords to arm their soldiers with is all-consuming, and instead makes the producers of weaponry the most societally important, the highest authority figures below the Vengir's monarch. It's not often the Vengir are willing to trade with any outsiders, but you've seen the conditions in the city once before, and the need for medicine is apparent. Likewise, Vengir blades for your sailors would be a nice complement to the Hoodric archers in combating pirates on their trade excursions. Before very long, you come upon Rotst, emerging through the ash trees in full detail. It's a city of Gothic stone towers with pointed purple roofs, or small clumps of sharp purple peaks atop a flat slate roof. Behind the city, you can see mines on the mountainside, the miners busily transporting ore to the forge just below. You head into the city, destined to arrive at that imposing forge on the other side. Around you, the townspeople move about their duties, seeming more like automatons than people in their work. Each of them wears a silver helmet with a spike on the top, both sides, and a pointed piece that covers part of their face. Although efficient, it leaves an impression of soullessness as you move through the city. You remind yourself that this city is far more lively than the cult cities dedicated to Ertzgor, where the Vengir cultists shed their flesh in the Thedkrakur ritual, becoming living skeletons consumed with a burning desire for vengeance and an unquenchable thirst for violence. The flesh is burned in offering to Ertzgor and Herkthir, the underworld, where the souls of the dead go after passing through the Vengir's Gate of Power. All of the Vengir make a pilgrimage to the Gate of Power once a year for the Skull Party, where the Vengir send offerings and pray for the dead relatives, the skull of whom they happen to be wearing while they do so. As you pass the main square, you see a macabre production being put on for attentive Vengir, actors singing a mournful dirge about a tragic last stand, their faces adorned with the red sap of the ash tree to look like blood, something the Vengir call sorrow paint. This is actually fairly common in Vengir society. Instead of jovial parades or parties, they tend to have more serious, historic, and as a result tragic, plays and operas, often accompanied by prayer for redemption and revenge. Their obsession with revenge is not something you take lightly. Although a Vengir legend, the tale of the capture of the Creator for his abandonment of them, and the subsequent slaying of the Godfinger before feeding it to a pack of rhino pigs is well known around the square. Although it is contested by some cultists that perhaps it was a god toe. Although other tribes may not celebrate it, the annual arrival of the Vengir's Pinky Day is always noted, and the implication of it not lost on those other tribes. Before long, you emerge on the other side of the city, looking at the short stretch of road between you and the forge where Hegor waits. You collect your thoughts and prepare yourself for the arduous negotiation to come.
Yay!
A little bit of lore.
I always enjoy that stuff.
It's good. It's good. But I got to give you credit. Thank you for calling out that Pinky Day may refer to, say, a pinky toe as much as a pinky finger.
I always thought it was a pinky toe, but, you know, that might be one of those long debated mysteries shrouded in legend. Is it the foot or is it the hand? You know, people will argue. I don't know.
Yes. Lots of material for heated debate amongst Vengir mystics and their religious schools.
Yeah. So why do you like Vengir, Sam? Because I find them to be poor and, I don't know, just kind of depressing.
You know, that is a good question. And, well, let's take a look at why they're not a good tribe and look at their resources. So they have normal mountain, forest, and field spawn rates, only a tenth of the fruit and the wild animal spawn rates, which off the bat means they have a huge kick in the gut when it comes to their early game economic development opportunities, because they have basically no fruit or animals to gather. You just either have maybe some fish or you have to go tier two. At which point, okay, you have above average farm spawns, although nowhere near the best in the game. There's plenty of other tribes that are better off. Or the third highest metal spawn rate in the game, which is their best resource. Third after Chinchi and Imo, which really sucks for them, because both tribes are better established to actually leverage the mines.
Yeah,
than they
like,
are.
That's kind of frustrating, right? You'd think that the tribe with the forges would have lots of mine. I mean, they do have
They do.
Metal,
but not the
but
most.
Not as much as Chinchi or Imo.
Yeah. So it's a little frustrating. I mean, so they have some resources going for them, but those are not reasons that I would play for them. And, their starting tech, Smithery, is the only reason you might want to play as them, and it makes them really fun. And that is, it's, I, next to maybe, I guess you mentioned this earlier in conversation. Maybe their cosmetic appearance could be the other reason.
Yeah, some people really like the whole goth, skull, black, look. But I mean, a lot also, really, a lot of people like starting with a swordsman, right?
Yes.
So that's, is that like, is that the main reason why people like to play
Yes.
it? I'm shocked. Shocked that
Yeah,
people
so
like starting with a swordsman. Why would that be?
you know, yeah, it's yeah, I think it yeah, it really just boils down. They get a sword at the start. Money, yeah, I could metal, but I mean, if you want metal, you go with either of the other two tribes that have more and better opportunity to leverage it. It's just you get a sword, and swords go slashy, slashy, choppy, chop. Yeah, looking at perks and drawbacks here, the perks are they get a really strong military force in the early game. Usually they can capture an enemy capital before turn four if they get the right spawn, assuming it's a cage match or just really crowded. They also have fairly decent tier two resource spawns. That's not bad. They do have the chance at a decent mid to late game once their economy exists. On the flip side of the coin, they don't have an economic tech, so that's not anything they start with. And also, they have to get climbing to even get mines to leverage the tech's economic side that they start with. It's really rough on them, and that delays their growth potential if they can't grab a city early on. And then, just to add on to that, the lack of tier one resources, specifically fruit and wild animals, just really hurts their early game prospects, leaving almost no opportunities to really grow next to maybe making roads or having fish or hopping straight to a tier two tech. But you only have the default spawn rate for forest, which is not amazing. And farms are your other good option, but you might not even know you have any until you get organization. If you don't start with fruit in your capital, you might go with hunting and never realize where the farms are, and you might just miss out on that entirely, which is another thing. And I mean, all this compounds when you look at the one bonus they have with smithery at the start, which is the ability to produce swords to go out and attack things. And Eastbrook, you've made this point before, it's a really good one. They can't produce the swords with the economy they start with. After you
Well,
get your first one or two, like it, you'd have to wait a couple turns to produce in your capital, and
right.
yeah.
So the main thing is, yes, swords are awesome, but they're expensive, and then you can't afford them. The only time I've really seen Vanguard do well is on, like you said, a cage match. Like I've seen tiny matches
Yes.
where you have Vanguard and it starts out close to their opponent, and then you send two swordsmen towards that enemy capital, and then you just wipe them out before they even get going.
Yeah, no, that honestly, that's their ideal situation. And you wanna really think about the map type and the population density of said map when you're choosing what tribe you want to play. And also consider whether or not somebody's gonna be throwing out some Quetzali players, because defenders will just really ruin your day.
Yeah, shields don't. Yeah, shields are probably the one thing that would make those swordsmen go, uh-oh.
Yeah, it slows everything down. But I mean, let's give you some advice on how to actually play as them instead of just talking about how some things aren't great. We're gonna look at a relatively high level split on some options for you starting out. You either go aggressive or you can go with more of a balanced start. With the aggressive start, honestly, in the majority of cases, you'll make that second swordsman to help out your first swordsman and go siege an enemy city early on, just to guarantee you get into it early on. And they don't have any chance to build up forces to try and fight back. Really useful on a cage match, for example. Alternatively, you can throw out a warrior, but while it is still quite capable of helping you get through to that other city, it's honestly more of what you do with the balance start. And moving on to that with the balance start, basically you don't have anyone to invade nearby, so you're gonna have to go with this, or maybe you don't feel like it. So what you do is make that warrior instead of a second swordsman and send your sword and your warrior off to go exploring in different directions to maximize the amount of exploring potential you can get. So hopefully you can find more open villages faster to give you a chance at expanding your economy through territorial expansion. And then once that warrior's made and off exploring, you pivot to getting the techs you need to level up your capital with the most sensible resource options available. Ideally, you'll only need the one tech to level up that capital, although that's ultimately up to fate. Maybe you need both hunting and organization. Also, you'll want to keep an eye out because, you know, maybe if you get a different city, you can pivot to leveling up that first or city you find instead.
If you're lucky, you stumble into terrain that's not Vengir black soil, and you can claim some villages that do have some decent resources. And the other thing I was thinking, I think we talked about this before, if you're going to go with the double swordsman approach, send them the same direction.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. It'd be such a waste to send them off to go explore in the opposite direction. It's like throwing 5 stars into the breeze.
The whole point of the swordsman is you do 2 of them together, and then you can crush an early city and take it and hopefully win in the early game. You just.
Yes.
But if, yeah, so.
If you're not going to attack anything, just get a warrior at 3 stars less, right?
Yeah. If you're going to send them out, send them as a buddy team up. Yeah,
definitely with you. Yeah, buddy up, buddy principle there. And here's some more general advice for you, actually thinking about it. So, I mean, overall, we've given this outline a couple of times, but let's just rehash really quick. Early game's going to be Vengir's worst time economically, but it will get better as the game progresses. Just like your therapist tells you, it will get better. And in the mid-late game, you have the opportunity to maybe even do something. And, I mean, so think about this logically, though. When you do make this decision, mines generally are better than farms to go for if you have to make the decision between the two, because they synergize much better with Vengir's starting tech, allowing you to get, you know, like, forges out immediately. But if you want rapid growth because of the delay to getting to mines, because you have to get climbing, absolutely, and you might have started with organization but not gotten climbing yet, farms might be cheaper to get to and allow you to whip out a bunch of giants with a similar tech and or eco investment, but you know, lower tech costs and 1 turn less spent getting to them. So I mean, keep that in mind, but in general, just better off going with mines and forges, because that's literally the only benefit you have economically that you're given, other than slightly above average farms.
So, Sam,
yes,
I never play Vengir. If I'm up against an opponent who is playing Vengir, how do I counter them?
Okay, so yeah, this is where we mentioned earlier that although they are a hard, sharp, pointy enemy early on, they're also incredibly soft, and actually in the same time frame too. So what you need to do is forward settle the crap out of them, contest them, get up in their face as much as possible early on, as early as humanly possible. You want to just get right in there because you're going to force them into the aggro hole. And I might as well recap on the aggro hole. It's been a few episodes since last we touched on it. That's where you or an opponent find, whatever player finds themselves stuck in a situation where they're far over investing into a war effort that is failing in the just in an effort to try and see if they can't make a breakthrough over and over again, even though the odds are not shifting in their favor. Meanwhile, their opponent is investing their economy, and because they're neglecting their economy, they're falling behind deeper and deeper into the aggro hole. So yeah, that's what you want to do with Vengir. Shove them deep into the aggro hole. They're going to actually happily somersault for you into it, because they just love fighting stuff, and they, I mean, Vengir players, the majority of them aren't going to really consider it. So yeah, once you got them into the aggro hole, just use warriors to whittle down their starting swordsmen and whatever other swordsmen they might have, you know, whipped out while you build up your own economy. And then once that attrition's going well on your side, you can just go full kilt and overwhelm them with sheer numbers. Also, roads, if you have them in riders, can be incredibly devastating alongside the warriors. But I mean, it really just comes down to being able to contain them as early as possible and just keep them very much so spending on a pointless fight instead of spending on a fight they're going to win that's going to immediately benefit them and give them a chance they wouldn't otherwise have.
So just let the Vengir players get lots of expensive swords and grow your own economy and keep your distance until you can out economy them. And if you do find yourself in a tiny game where you see two swordsmen coming at your capital on turn three, you can just resign.
Yes. And honestly, don't be shy about trying to use warriors to purposely bait swordsmen, Vengir swordsmen, into attacking them. Especially if you get a defense bonus, just because they're a lot cheaper. You lose two swords or two warriors while crippling a swordsman, still cheaper than it costs to make the swordsman.
Right.
So it's always on your hand. Just play the attrition game, and eventually they're going to find out they have literally no economy. All their units are dead, and you just keep on producing. It turns into, what, the Soviets marching on Berlin?
But they have those skull parties and the black skull, and yeah. So why do you like this tribe? Why do you play it?
Well, okay, yeah. The main reason I like this tribe and play it is just to be, like, scary. I want to have an intimidating presence early on in a crowded game or a full-on cage match, somewhere where I can access other players early on. Any other situation is really bad for them unless you want to provide yourself a challenge and play at a disadvantage to other tribes. But, like, if you know you're going to be in a cage match, like, I recently did a YouTube video with, like, 100 different bots in it playing against Mars. Yeah, Vengir is perfect there because there's just endless capitals nearby.
And those capitals have different terrain than Vengir, yes. So you can take them and they actually have resources.
Yes, and half the time they're already leveled up too.
Yep. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah. But yeah, I think that's about that. And honestly, I think that wraps up our discussion on the Vengir here. So,
yes. Thank goodness that's over.
Yes. Yeah. So, before we hop into plugs here, actually, we should call out the recent update. So, finally, live games, tournaments, and replays are live and available to every single person.
Gosh, yes. We have been waiting for replays. I mean, they've been in beta for quite a while. So, beta players have been kind of playing around with them, and honestly, replays are my favorite thing because you can watch old games, you can watch games from more experienced players,
yes,
and learn so much.
Yes, and it's really good. So even from learning from your own mistakes, because then you can see it happen in real time and how your opponent took advantage of it, maybe how they saw something you didn't realize they saw. A lot of good stuff you can see there. And beyond that, Polytopians, we on the Polytopian Times Discord have an official channel just for replays. So you can pop them on and share them with everybody and sort of keep them alive and know that there's a 10 replay limit. So eventually you'll hit a point where you can't keep any more. Well, you can hop on over to our Discord. There'll be a link in the description for that. Paste it on into that channel, and it'll be saved for you to go back to in time and to share with others. And if you even want to, you can pop it into the replay submissions with a little disclaimer letting us know that you want to put this out for use and give permission on the YouTube channel. And, we might just feature your replay on the YouTube channel. So that's something to keep in mind. Absolutely, for sure. That really, really exciting stuff here.
Is there a particular kind of replay you want to see? I mean, besides Vengir, I'm sure you want to see lots of Vengir, but is there some, like, cool, like, you want to see lots of giants? You want to see anything, I don't know, unusual or something that can help us learn?
I mean, definitely always looking for the largest, most epic team games that are out there, but, you know, honestly, I'm interested in seeing what some of our professional league players do outside of the league games when they play against each other, because you hear all sorts of fun, crazy stories about that, and this is their chance to also share it out with everybody, and I think that's got a lot of potential to it. I'm, you know, as much as I want to see a giant, massive, crazy game, I'm also curious what happens when, like, Carl Confetti does a 1v1 with Estrella.
Yeah, I really want to see we should start our own replay channel in Poly Champions to put the playoff games and other of the really like top level pro games so people can learn from them.
True that. Well, I think that wraps up our stuff. Now, eSpark, did you have any other plugs you wanted to drop here?
No, yeah, I really want to be excited about the replays. I know there are some official in-game tournaments that are through the Challenger Mode app, but there's in the new update, there should be a link. So just look in the game and you can see Challenger Mode. I think they're hosting a big official one soon and there'll be more in the future. So that has a lot of potential also.
Yes, yeah, definitely go check that out. A lot of cool stuff there, and it's really easy to get that set up. I've got it done myself. And you know what? Come to think of it, there was one other update we've sort of ignored here on today's episode. That was adding in all the cool tribe skins. We did touch on a little bit with the Bird Score cultist. Yeah, Barter, Vengir, and, why am I blanking?
Hoodrick,
yes, with their Green Archer, yes. They all got some very cool custom skins you can get and then apply in all your single-player and multiplayer games if you want to have something very cool and different. Honestly, out of the three, obviously, I love the Vengir ones the most, and then I think Barter's my second favorite out of that. Then Hoodrick. Hoodrick's still nice, but I don't know, just didn't have the same flair the other two did.
You know what? I agree with you 100%. The Vengir skin is so fun with the skeletons, and I love the little skeleton pigs. Those are so. I love that they changed the rhino pigs to also be skeleton pigs. And then I agree with you. Barter is the second best. I love the spear throwers instead of having it be an archer. I love that it's a ranged unit. I mean, the skins don't change the function of the units at all, right? So we should mention that the tribes, the resources, everything in the game, the mechanics
are the
identical to the original. It just changes the look.
Yeah, and I mean, it changes the look for both the cities and the units, we should mention. But all those people on the Reddit who are suggesting that they added in a spear unit in the game, technically, this has happened.
Yeah, there is a spear unit. Again, it functions exactly the same as the archer. But I love that idea. I think the animation is great, and I agree with you. I'm most disappointed with the Hoodrick. They're just kind of like Hoodrick wearing capes, and the bows are a little bit... I would have loved to see a crossbow instead but, you know, but they're cool. Yeah. They're all fun.
Maybe really a cuirass. You know, lean into that that English heritage, and you know, you give them like the green hats, but maybe like a cuirass, like a war effort one instead of the ranger style you get.
Yeah, and some people have asked. Sometimes they can't get the skins to work in multiplayer, but it should work now because that everyone should have that update.
Oh,
but they're
yes.
a lot of fun, and they say they will be releasing skins for all the tribes, but gradually. So they'll only come out, you know, a few at a time. I don't know how fast, but they do plan to release skins for all the tribes little by little.
Yes, I've heard it. Well, there's rumors that it might be packs of three skins at a time, and judging from the first release, and given the way that rounds nicely and evenly into the number of tribes in the game, at least until the end, maybe for the standard tribes anyways. But enough speculation on our part. Thanks as always for tuning in, Polytopians, and thanks as always for joining us, eSpark.
Yep, happy to be here. Thanks.
Of course, and until next time, see ya.